Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Beard et al. Titled, Understanding Guyton's Venous Return Curves. This article published online ahead of print, June 10, 2011. My guests today are Senior Associate Editor David Cass, authors Daniel Beard and Eric Feigl, as well as leading expert John Tyberg. Let's get started.
Thanks very much, Kara. Well, about 50 years ago, Arthur Guyton performed some animal experiments, and those animal experiments ended up in virtually every medical physiology book that we've used for many decades now and are taught to thousands of medical students around the world to try to understand the basic physiology, the circulation, venous return into the heart, and the control of cardiac output. And in the perspective just published by Dan Beard and Eric Feigl, we're returning to those experiments and are really asking some fundamental questions as to whether the conclusions are correct and or whether the perspective that, that the measurements were taken with have led to sort of strange conclusions that are not necessarily helpful for the medical student, physiologist, and certainly for the physician. And I think the fact that we're revisiting this 50 years later already tells us something about the importance of the topic, and getting it right, and getting our appreciation of the underpinnings right. With that very brief preamble, I want to turn this over to John to discuss the basic message, the points that Guyton made, and the points that Dan and Eric have made in their perspective. John?
Thanks, David. First of all, let me say that I totally applaud the intent of the article by Dan and Eric, and although I approached the issue in my own way, of course, somewhat differently in my 2002 review in Pflüger's, I'm as critical of Guyton's view of venous physiology as they are. And looking back over this literature, I really think that the critical issues were focused very clearly, very helpfully, in a 1985 article about heart failure and the conceptual problems with veno sequestration. Milton Packer wrote, "Although seemingly reasonable, the hypothesis that heart failure is characterized by both a decrease in forward flow and an increase in venous return constitutes a physical impossibility." Well, I was a medical student a long time ago, but I think I can imagine the situation that perhaps prompted Packer to state this. And to me, that implies that it's a serious semantic issue, really, about this business of venous return. And I think there are two definitions.
Well, let me ask Dan. So it's a perspective of what's first and what's second, chicken egg. Is cardiac output determining the right atrial pressure, as Guyton proposed, right atrial pressure is, quote, determining cardiac output. So why don't you explain the point of view and the perspective?
First, I want to point out that John's absolutely right. This controversy has been around for a long time, and this is by no means the first paper that outlines the flaws in the Guyton interpretation. What is the cause and effect relationship here? There's something of a tautology in the Guyton's original interpretation and in many of the textbooks and much of the literature here. The Guyton model is a mechanical model of the circulation. And what that model predicts is that the cause and effect relationship is that flow determines right atrial pressure. Specifically, as the flow is decreased, the pressure increases. It turns out that that's exactly how Guyton performed his experiments. In fact, flow was varied as the independent variable, and pressure was measured. Where the interpretation in the literature gets flawed is when the leap is made that the increased pressure, which is caused by a decreasing flow, then acts to restrict flow or inhibit flow, and that's where the logic becomes tautological.
So this has led to some funny terminology, and I think the perspective discusses this in some detail. In particular, this idea of a resistance to venous return. Eric, how would you describe the problems that are posed by that both terminology and concept?
Well, the first thing to remember is that all of the measurements and all of the modeling is in steady state. That means that there are no shifts going on, and between two different steady states, there will be shifts. So in steady state, the question is, does right atrial pressure form a back pressure to venous return? And venous return, by definition, in steady state, is equal to cardiac output. The model, Guyton's model, predicts that that is the case, or the other way around. And the question really is, how do you interpret Guyton's equations and models? The problem is that Guyton interpreted his equations so that right atrial pressure is a back pressure limiting venous return. Now that's erroneous, and article and many other authors have pointed this out, that it is the cardiac output which determines the right atrial pressure in a systemic circulation which has both resistance and capacitance.
John, why don't you comment on how the distribution of blood volume between resistance and capacitance vessels can be changed in the condition that you started with, heart failure, that would then alter the relationship between mean cardiac output and right atrial pressure?
Yes, I'm happy to. Let me give these two definitions of venous return as I see them. The first is an obvious one, that is the instantaneous rate of caval flow back to the heart, if you will. And, you know, this instantaneous rate of caval flow is a very useful definition for transient phenomena. For instance, we couldn't understand orthostatic hypotension or the thoracic pump if we didn't think of it this way. And there's nothing wrong with the definition, but to me, the most interesting situations, heart failure and the effects of vasoactive drugs, are altered steady states, as Eric says, in which case the venous return must be exactly equal to cardiac output. The second definition, in my view, is that blood volume sequestration or mobilization is the thing that's really of interest. And what I've tried to do over several years now is to describe these alterations in venous physiology by using pressure volume relationships rather than pressure flow relationships, which at best is an awkward way of getting at capacitance phenomena. Then what happens with heart failure is a compensatory decrease in so-called unstressed volume, or an increase in venous tone, or a decrease in venous capacitance. They're all the same, describing the same phenomena, but it's a changing pressure-volume relationship in the venous pool.
So, Dan, what I'd like to close with are a couple of sentences that would sort of summarize the nature of perspective, and in a way, how you would address the conundrum faced by the medical student who's now looking at their chapter on cardiac physiology, is just trying to finish understanding Guyton's curves.
So one thing I've told our medical students a few times is that, to my knowledge, very few people die from venous return failure. The point there is that the heart and its ability to pump is what's determining cardiac output. And the cause and effect relationship of the Guyton interpretation, that the so-called back pressure limiting venous return limits cardiac output, is incorrect. In very simple terms, if the heart, which is the pump, is pumping weakly, then blood is pooled at the inlet of the pump, the veins, and because of a pressure-volume capacitance relationship, that causes the inlet or the cardiac or the right atrial pressure to increase.
Eric, final statement?
Yes. I teach medical students, and I don't use Guyton curves at all. And when we discuss heart failure, I ask them, where is the blood going to accumulate when the pump is failing, on the inlet or the outlet side of a pump? All the students get it right. I then ask them, if cardiac output goes up, what happens to right atrial pressure? And then they have to think about it a little while. They've already answered the question, when cardiac output goes down, that right atrial pressure will go up. But when cardiac output goes up, they have to think just a little longer and say, it will go down. And that's the end. That's all you need to know.
And there you go. So I want to thank all of you. 50 years later, critical data being interpreted in a way that is straightforward and makes sense, and particularly important, makes sense to the way actually the in vivo physiology is functioning. Kara?
And to our readers, thanks for listening to the AJP Heart and Circ podcast series.